Welcome to episode 8 of the Apologetics Canada podcast. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. So, Andy and John, what did you guys do for the Christmas break, and what is this new year looking like for you guys?
Well, I did a whole lot of nothing. I slept all day, watched movies, and played board games with my kids, which, interestingly enough, they beat me a lot. However, I was talking to another parent about that, and they said, hey, it sounds like a good strategy to me, which is actually kind of true. If you beat your kids all the time at games, it just demoralizes them. So instead, they demoralized me.
Uh-huh. And then, you kept landing on the snake rather than sliding down.
Right? That's right.
That's demoralizing itself.
Yeah, the two favorite games at the Steiger House, Snakes and Ladders, and the memory game, you know, those cards that you would flip over two at a time and then flip them back? Oh, my goodness, my son's memory. He's 6 years old, and he just beats me. I probably shouldn't even have mentioned this, you know, but he beats me repeatedly. And then I managed to get sick in the process. So as you can tell from my voice, I'm getting over something.
Not only is he the director of Apologetics Canada, he's also a little horse. Now, also, we should probably talk.
John's probably been waiting all day to use that pun.
You would make a great dad.
Yeah.
So, John, what was Christmas like for you?
First Christmas married. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot of family things, you know. I'm an Abbotsford guy now. Family's very key. Mm-hmm. So we visited all the relatives and opened some presents and things of that nature.
So your wife is from Abbotsford?
Yes, she is. Okay. She's an Abbotsford gal. So, first year of marriage. We had a good time. We just stayed in Abbotsford and played some board games.
Cool.
Steve, what did you do on the Christmas break?
Yeah, I had a chance to go out to Alberta with my wife and my baby girl.
We do give Steve time off here
yes.
at Apologetics.
Yes.
Not
yes,
often, but we do do it.
That's right.
We let him out of the basement every now and then.
Every now and again.
Yeah, hey, you know, you got to exploit that cheap Asian labor, you know?
Oh, you heard us talking about that.
That's right. So, yeah, we went to Alberta. That's where my wife is from. So, Maya had a chance to spend some time with her grandparents, and that was all good. She's learning to giggle now, so that's a big plus of raising a child, I suppose. Everything mundane that she does becomes so extraordinary because she is a 3-month-old baby. So it was a special time. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Awesome. Christmas takes on a whole nother flavor with kids. It's very, mm-hmm. very fun.
Okay, so today we want to talk about this YouTube video that I found, or a friend of mine posted, rather.
Yeah, I saw it too. It was kind of going viral for a little while there.
Yeah. A friend of mine who identifies himself as an atheist posted this video on Facebook.
Oh, hold on a second. There's atheists on YouTube?
What?
Are you sure?
So yeah, it piqued my interest, so I watched it, and it's titled 15 Things Christians Should Not Say to Atheists. So you can actually look that up on YouTube, and there are a couple of videos, and we're just going to talk about one of them that my friend posted. So we'll just kind of go through each one, and just Andy and John, you feel free to jump in.
At a rapid pace.
That's right, because there are 15 of them that we want to talk about and some general comments to go along with that. So number one, okay, things Christians should not say to atheists. Number one, where do you get your morality from? So the idea is that
I'll just grab that.
Okay, sure. Go for it.
Because this is something I was even talking to Dr. Craig about this one with his debates. Because mm-hmm. even academic atheists will get this confused. Mm-hmm. That oftentimes what happens here is sometimes maybe this is happening on the Christian's part too, but sometimes the atheist misunderstands the Christian that says that morality comes from God. And they misunderstand that to say that you need to believe in God to have morality. And so just to clear the air, that's just a misconfusion. You don't need to believe in God to have morality. I know plenty of lovely atheists that don't believe in God. What What the Christian is saying, though, is that if God didn't exist, morality would not exist. And because right. morality exists, God exists. Or we could use the moral argument, mm-hmm. which is objective moral values. If objective moral values exist, God exists. Objective moral values do exist. Therefore, God exists. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to give a logical proof.
Right. So the key difference is epistemology versus ontology. And if you don't know what that means, epistemology is just the theory of knowledge, so how we know things, whereas ontology is the nature of the theory of being. So we're not saying you need to believe in God to be a good person, but without God, we can't justify our morality. Is that?
Yep. Yep.
Good. Okay. Well, let's
go
move
the next
on
one.
Then.
Yeah.
Number two, your life must be so empty as an atheist. So this guy in the video, what he was saying is that I just don't believe in God. I have plenty of things that give my life meaning, like family and friends. You know, I just don't believe in God. That doesn't mean my life is empty.
Yeah, it's just bad logic. Because you don't believe in God, because you're an atheist, doesn't mean that your life is going to be. Or what? How did he write it? You must be.
Your life must be so empty. So he's saying that this is what Christians tell him. You know, oh, your life must be so empty because you don't believe in anything.
Right.
Which is
basically, he's just saying, I find meaning in stuff, mm-hmm. which is classic existentialism in the sense of, he says, family and friends, like that's where he gets his purpose from. Mm-hmm. So the Christian would say, yeah, but what's the purpose of that? Mm-hmm. Is there anything bigger than that? When he's saying, I don't need anything bigger than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can prescribe meaning to these things. I enjoy them. Therefore, they must be worthwhile. So, I mean, you can smell the worldview right off the bat.
Yeah. And I think, too, though, this is another one where I think he's right, though, where Christians confuse, again, subjective with objective. Mm-hmm. So, subjectively, yeah, he can give his life meaning. Mm-hmm. An atheist can give their lives meaning. So they're not, you know, empty, you know. They can find meaning through family, friends, or whatever. But mm-hmm. what a Christian means by it, though, is saying that you most likely would mean, you know, you must not have objective meaning. But that's not the type of meaning that we tend to talk about, mm-hmm. in the sense of that this objective meaning, in the sense that the whole of your life has significance, in that that everything that you do doesn't come to ruin at death, mm-hmm. but that there's some sort of transcendent meaning. And so again, I think this is often just miscommunication.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on because we still have lots to cover. Things you shouldn't say to atheists. Number three, why are you mad at God? And this guy, I believe his name is Heman Mehta. I don't know if there was an R in his first name, so it could be Herman. But I believe there was no R, so I think it's Heman. And so he said, no, atheists don't hate God. We just don't believe in God. You know, we also don't hate unicorns. So how do you guys want to respond to that?
Well, if you read Romans 1, it says that everybody knows God or knows that there's some kind of a God out there, and then they suppress that truth and end up worshiping other things instead. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, if I'm talking to this guy, I'm not probably going to say, why are you mad at God? I don't know. And
I'm personally not 100% convinced everybody's mad at God, in the sense of, like, they might be frustrated
or scared of
or
God,
or doubting, or
sometimes they're just angry,
confused,
at Christians,
yeah,
rather than God necessarily. In fact, he does mention that towards the end too. But yeah.
I was listening to a lecture by actually one of our speakers for the Apologetics Canada conference, John Coe, and his lecture, Why People Don't Believe. One of the things that he was saying is, it's kind of like people are aware that there's a God, but that they haven't been living in up to this God standard, and so therefore they're kind of, it brings fear of the unknown. What is God going to be like if he's there? Well, I have not measured up to it. And so they feel like maybe they're under the wrath of this God, which creates unpleasant feelings for them. And so what they do is they stuff it down. And his argument was it's kind of the same as like a kid who has maybe been tossed around in foster care. And he's having a good time, but then somebody will say something like, hey, what's your dad like? And he is totally torn about what his dad is like because he loves his dad, but it also his dad abuses him and his dad's been negligent of him. And so he's got all these terrible things about his dad. So what? How does this young kid deal with it? He suppresses it. And he pushes it down and he's having a good time playing on the swings. And then somebody says, hey, what's your dad like? And all of a sudden, all these feelings come right back up. So all it took was one question to bring up all this uncertainty, that whereas he would way rather just ignore it. How does the kid process it? And John Coe was saying, it's a lot like when a Christian comes up to an atheist and says, tell me about your relationship with God, or do you believe in God? And all of a sudden, all these conflicted things. What is God like? Is he good? Is he bad? I'd rather not think about it, and so they've suppressed it. And if we read Romans 1, I mean, it was a challenge to me, because I usually think of people in terms of, well, atheists don't believe at all, and theists do believe, and Christians believe that Jesus is God. But Romans 1 seems to say that everybody knows that there is some kind of God out there, but they suppress the truth. So that was the example. I found it kind of helpful.
So maybe, I don't know, but maybe everyone is mad at God, but it might not be the best evangelistic tactic.
Oh, definitely not. No. Yeah. So what John Coe said was actually one of the ways you can talk to somebody is just say, look, you're an atheist to me over this cup of coffee or around the water cooler at work or whatever, but I want to know what you're really like. I mean, you don't have to say it explicitly right now, but what are you really like, you know, at 2 a.m. when you wake up and you're just staring at your roof and it's quiet and it's just you and whatever's out there? That's when you find out what you really believe. Because John Coe said he was an atheist at 19 and he used to debate all these Christians. And then he would say, I'm an atheist, I'm an atheist, I swear I'm an atheist. And then he would pray that he would become a great, I think, basketball star or something like that, or football maybe. So he was living a conflicted life where publicly he was saying he was an atheist, but privately he'd still pray at night. So when I see this thing saying, are you mad at God? Maybe people are kind of mad at God. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons.
One thing with psychoanalysis is that it's really challenging because it cuts both ways. And all the other person has to do is just deny that that's actually happening inside of him. So we can say, why are you angry at God? Why are you mad at God? All that the atheist has to do is just deny that. And so sometimes psychoanalysis can be difficult that way. Or in the same way, the atheist can challenge me and say, well, you believe that because you want it to be true, because you want some kind of an emotional crutch. The thing with psychoanalysis, though, it's an interesting insight into what that person's inner thoughts may be like, but it doesn't really do anything to commend a view to be true or anything of that sort. It doesn't actually help with the discourse of whether something is true or not. So,
sure, because you can say Christianity is a crutch for those who want to believe in God, and you could say that atheism is a crutch for those who don't want to believe in God. Because it would be nice to not believe in God if it meant you could do whatever you want on a weekend, mm-hmm. or, you know, spend yeah. your night Again. In whoever's bed you want,
yeah,
or whatever. And then all of a sudden, well, it would be very convenient. Like the guards at Auschwitz, mm-hmm. it would be very nice for them not to believe in any kind of God because then they wouldn't be held accountable for the crimes that they did. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways, and it leaves the argument quite neutral.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've spent enough time, so let's move on. You can't disprove God. Now, this is what a Christian would say to an atheist. You can't disprove God. And the guy in the video says, when you can prove that flying unicorns don't exist, we'll play the game. So it's kind of like the flying spaghetti monster
right.
kind of a thing. So,
well, this one I just flat out disagree with him. It's true. You can't disprove God, but you can't prove him either. I think one of the things that a lot of atheists don't like to own up to mm-hmm. is that whatever worldview you hold is going to require faith. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter if it's belief in or non-belief in, especially when we're talking about a universal negative, like no God exists. I mean, how could you possibly know something like that unless mm-hmm. you had infinite knowledge? that your worldview is going to require faith. So the question is, how much faith does your worldview require? Mm-hmm. And so I would say that I would actually make the argument that the Christian worldview requires less faith than the atheist worldview. Now, again, I don't know that that's such a very – I don't know that that's a good evangelistic tactic to tell somebody that you can't disprove God. And it's also not good logic just because mm-hmm. you can't disprove something. So it doesn't mean that you should all of a sudden believe it, mm-hmm. right? There's lots of things I can't mm-hmm. disprove, but I'm not just going to suddenly believe it. That's why I've said this before. That's why I define faith as trusting what you have good reason to believe is true. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yes, mm-hmm. philosophically that is the case. But the question we're asking is, what is there evidence for?
In fact, I think you can disprove God, as in like the monotheistic God that we hold to in Judeo-Christian worldview.
Yeah, the Christian God you could disprove.
Mm-hmm. Or even, I would say, even Allah in Islam, you can disprove the existence of this monotheistic God if you can show that, you know, conceptually it's just self-contradictory. For example, that's what a lot of atheists do. For example, you know, they'll attack the notion of omnipotence because it is self-refuting, that sort of a thing. You know, the classic, well, you know, can God create a stone so heavy he can't lift? Or if you're a Simpsons fan, then, you know, what was it? I think it was Bart that said, can he create a burrito that's so hot he can't even eat it, right? So if you can show that, you know, that this concept of God is logically incoherent, then you can actually disprove God that way.
Yeah, that's a great point. The other one, too, with what I was saying with Christianity was if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, mm-hmm. Then Christianity falls apart. That's right. Jesus mm-hmm. isn't who he claimed to be.
One comment that this gentleman made in the video that I found interesting is I'm just going to paraphrase here. If you notice that I've been paraphrasing what he's been saying, he says something to the effect of, why is it that Christians have no problem simply dismissing other millions and millions of other gods without really thinking about it? But then when I, the atheist, try to do the same thing about their God, their defense goes up and say, well, you can't disprove God. And then he goes on to say, well, first go and disprove these millions of other gods and I'll get around to yours. So what's your reaction to that, Andy and John?
Mm-hmm. I need to think.
I've been hearing that quite a bit lately. In fact, I was at EPS this year, Evangelical Philosophical Society, and Dr. Paul Chamberlain spoke on that issue, because a lot of atheists want to kind of hide in that and say that they don't need to make any sort of argumentation for their disbelief, mm-hmm. that this is sort of like the de facto, you know, position, and anything else is going to, you have to defend anything other than, mm-hmm. you know, non-belief in God. But one of the things that I want to raise is that when we're talking about belief in God, again, we're talking about having good reasons mm-hmm. to believe what we believe. It's not like this idea of blind faith. We're taking the evidence that we have, both facts and experience, and we are seeking to make the most sense of them. And so when I dismiss like the Greek god Zeus and, mm-hmm. and all of the other Greek gods, I have good reason mm-hmm. to. And there's lots of other gods that I dismiss, again, because logic is rules of reliable thought. And when I follow those rules of reliable thought, mm-hmm. they make sense. You know, that I know that it's not a god throwing lightning bolts. It's not a god holding up the earth on his shoulders, that kind of stuff, yeah. right?
And I find that a lot of these atheists make this category error. And they make this comparison between finite polytheistic gods that are localized. They're physical in some way, and so they're localized, they're finite. And then they compare that to the Judeo-Christian or Islamic God that's supposed to be spirit, that's not in any place, but he is everywhere because he has this causal connection to all of the world and things like that. So they take a finite being and an infinite being and they kind of chuck it up to...
Do you know what's interesting about that? Is the ancients understood the distinction. And in fact, Christians were, if you read ancient literature, Christians were referred to as atheists. in the past.
They were, yeah.
Yeah, so it might actually surprise that we have a lot more in common with atheists than they think. Mm-hmm. You know, because Christians only believed in one God mm-hmm. and not this plethora of gods, mm-hmm. whether they be Roman or Greek or whatever. And in fact, that's why they got persecuted so much, mm-hmm. was because the Romans, the Greeks were worried that the Christians were making all these gods angry because they didn't believe in them. They only believed in one God. Mm-hmm. So again, with regards to the Judeo-Christian worldview, the reason I believe in it and I hold to it is because it follows rules of reliable thought. It makes sense of the world, mm-hmm. and it requires less faith than atheism does. It's like, just one quick example, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about where everything came from. Mm-hmm. And so it makes more sense to me that there is something non-physical that created the physical than to say that the physical created the physical, mm-hmm. Of which there's no evidence for that. And there is evidence that the physical came into existence. So you have to start asking some important questions like where did and how did the physical world come into existence. And so then what the atheist does is they'll posit ideas like the multiverse, that there's this multiverse exists and it's just creating all these universes. And mm-hmm. and now you have to ask the question, well, where did the multiverse come from? And, you know, you begin this infinite regress of causes. Mm-hmm. And so, again, for me, I go, wow, it eventually, and this is interesting, eventually you have to hit an uncaused cause. Mm-hmm. And in the past, scientific consensus was that the universe was eternal. Mm-hmm. But then, 100 years ago, Big Bang cosmology comes onto the scene, and we find out, no, that the universe had a beginning. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, you have to rethink and all that stuff. And so what I'm getting at is, again, it's going to require faith. How much faith is it going to require?
Right. And personally, I have reasons to reject, for example, gods of, say, Hinduism. Because Hinduism is a pantheistic religion, and pantheism, I think, has many problems with it. For example, in pantheism, the ultimate reality, God, is the same thing as all of this world. Right? All of this world is God. God is all of this world. Well, it turns out, say, you know, for example, that Big Bang cosmology you mentioned.
Comes self-defeating.
Yeah. Shows that this world had a beginning. And so God isn't eternal. God isn't transcendent. And so already there, that kind of rules out the 330 million Hindu deities.
Yeah, and you know what? Kind of along those lines, Steve, that mm-hmm. I think a mistake a lot of atheists make mm-hmm. on the flip side of this is they often assume that we were born into Christianity and we've just been born with these blinders on. I came to Christianity through thinking, through searching, mm-hmm. through following rules of reliable thought. That's what brought me to Christianity. I know with Steve, with you as well, this has been a journey for us. It's not like mm-hmm. blindly accepted.
I've been an agnostic myself for a number of months. I had a bit of a faith crisis. I thought about it. I came to the conclusion for a while there that, yeah, Christianity didn't make any sense to me. It has to be false. And it was only later that, you know, I came back and I started thinking more about this. And so, yeah, I put a great deal of time thinking about my faith.
Yeah, and still do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Number five, things Christians shouldn't say to an atheist. Number five, what if you're wrong? And the guy's response is, well, nothing's going to happen if I'm wrong. You're assuming that God is going to punish me. And for what? For asking honest questions and coming to a conclusion that he didn't like? You know, why would he be mad at me for that? Every atheist I know is genuinely interested in this stuff. We think about it and we talk about it all the time. And let's put it this way. What if you're wrong? So that's...
Do you know one thing that he's dead right about? I know a lot of atheists, and they do care a lot about this. In fact, mm-hmm. I'd say mm-hmm. a lot of the atheist friends I know think more about this than my Christian friends do, to be quite honest with you.
I agree with that.
And so in that sense, I totally get it, and I deeply respect a lot of atheists because I think a lot of them are really genuine thinkers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of a silly one, you know, what if you're wrong thing. in some sense. In others, I think Pascal makes a really good point with his wager. Mm-hmm. Not that he's going to wager towards God because he's going to get the better benefit payout, but that when he weighs the evidence, let's say you weigh the evidence and you come out even, you know, you find equal weighting for or against it. Pascal says, well, it seems to make more sense that you would wager for God because you have more to lose and more to gain if you didn't.
Now, just let's pause there for a second, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with Pascal's wager. Could you just explain it to us briefly?
Yeah, Pascal was a brilliant theologian, philosopher, mathematician, lived in the 1600s. And he wrote a book called, he didn't actually write a book. He wrote a bunch of stuff down and ended up getting put into his Pensées.
They were glorified tweets.
They pretty much are glorified tweets. It's a great way to put it. And in it, about halfway through, if you ever grab the book, you can read this. He's got a section in there called The Wager, mm-hmm. and he goes into more depth on this.
Okay. Sorry, and you were talking about The Wager earlier.
Yeah, that he's saying when if you weigh the evidence and say you're coming out with equal weighting on a subject, he's like, well, when it comes to God, he says, I would wager for God because I have more to gain and I have more to lose if I didn't. Mm-hmm. So for what it's worth, and he's saying if you're wrong mm-hmm. on this, you've got a lot to lose. But yeah, I think this is where the atheist doesn't understand where that argument comes in. That's along a journey, towards the end of a journey. That's not saying because I could make up a God and tell you something terrible is going to happen to you if you didn't believe in this God. That suddenly doesn't become a good reason to believe mm-hmm. in that God mm-hmm. that I just made up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I take his point in the sense of if there is no God and a Christian's threat of judgment is not that scary to them. It's kind of the same as somebody saying you better be good or Santa's going to not give you any presents, right? I'm not really scared about somebody threatening me with being on Santa's naughty list.
Right.
But if there is a God, like you say, I mean, he's in trouble for threatening God, but he makes it seem like he's so innocent. Oh, is God going to punish me for weighing the evidence and finding out that he was left wanting? And that's not why the Bible says that we're punished. The Bible says that we are sinful, meaning that we're cut off from our relationship with God in our thoughts, in our words, and in our deeds, that we are rebels against the king over all the kings. You know, like we've committed treason. And that's why we're punished. We've broken God's laws. And so his straw man, you know, again, in this point is a little bit, it's going to be sad for him, you know, to come before God and say, you know, I just didn't see enough evidence mm-hmm. and find out that, you know, it was all there the whole time. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I could see why under his worldview a threat is not worth anything. But I could see if Christianity is true, then the threats are real. And we do need to get right with God. And Jesus is the only way to do that. God's gone through great expense to get us right with him. And to ignore that, that's not cool.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Number six, you just have to have faith. And his response to that is, well, God has given me this mind to use it, and you're asking me to just close it when it comes to religion? And he says, this statement usually comes when I've stumped them. This is a cop-out way of saying, well, there's no answer for that, but I just believe it because it makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure, Andy, you're just itching to say something about
You know me well, Stu. You know me well. And on this point, we almost fully agree with him. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely right. Blind faith is ridiculous. However, there is an aspect of faith, again, that we all have to have because we know epistemologically, you know, Descartes made this very clear. There's very few, if anything, you know, besides that axiom, I think, therefore I am, that we can prove with 100% certainty. So kind of got to humble ourselves here that, yeah, we have faith in everything, but it's faith that is backed by having good reason. Again, faith is trusting what you have good reason to believe is true. The last part, though... What was the last part he said there again?
that it's just a cop-out way of saying, well,
He's able to show people, he's able to stump them, mm-hmm. right? So maybe he is able to stump some people. For me, oftentimes people are asked, oh man, aren't you like nervous when you go talk at a university or something like that and you do Q&A? And my answer is no, because I've already thought deeply on all these things. I would be glad if somebody could bring up an idea I haven't already thought about. That doesn't mean, though, that I have answers to everything, because I think that's silly to think that we should be looking for answers to everything. What I'm looking for is logical coherency. I want to know that something's possible. I don't need to know that that's exactly how it took place. Take evil, for example. I don't know why God allows evil. That's a mystery. That's different than I have faith. I don't have faith that I don't know why God allows evil. It's just a mystery why God allows evil. But I do know that it's logically coherent that you can have a good God and the existence of evil with agents with free will. So now I don't have a logical contradiction when it comes to God. And because see, now that would be faith. If I had a logical contradiction when it came to God's existence, and I chose to believe anyways, just because I had faith that it was true, then we'd be talking about faith.
Faith in the sense of blind
faith? Just blind faith.
Yeah. Okay, to clarify that. Okay. Do you have anything to
add? Not that point, no.
Okay. Moving on, number 7. Just open your heart to God. And this guy's response, no, I'm not actively shielding myself from God. I'm open to the possibility. You go ahead and explain to me why I should believe in God. And then he goes on to say, if you offer us something worthwhile, that'll be great. But I don't think you're going to.
Ah, I mean, there he lays out his cards right there, right? I don't think you're going to. And don't say that you have an open heart if you're not going to, if you're going to be the yeah, but guy.
No kidding, hey? Really, how open are you? he closes the door. I'm really open, slams the door.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what's interesting with that? I had a conversation with an atheist once, and I shared with him tons of evidence for the reason why I believe in God, which he would make up reasons not to believe. He didn't care if they were logical or not. He would just make up reasons not to believe. And eventually I stopped him and just asked him a simple question. I said, could you be convinced that God exists? And he had to think about that one for a while, and he said, yeah, I could be convinced. And then I asked him, okay, what would it take? To which he said, I don't know. Huh. And I find that very often. They'll say that they're open, but, I mean, even that guy didn't sound very open to me.
And Pascal said, there's enough light for those who are searching for light, but there's enough darkness for those who want to stay in the dark.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay, let's move on. Number 8. You were really never really religious to begin with. And his response, but a lot of atheists I know come from religious backgrounds, especially Christian ones, and yet Christians say, well, you must have never really been a Christian to begin with. No, they used to believe in all this Christian stuff. They realized later that this was all BS and they dropped it.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with what he's saying there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Well, that was easy. Moving on.
That was easy.
Number 9.
Way to go, atheist.
That's right. Number 9. What happened in your childhood? How's your relationship with your father? And his response, well, my childhood was fine. I just thought about this stuff. That's all. I actually, again, like I kind of agree with it. It's kind of generalizing, right?
Poor logic.
Yeah, just because some atheists reject God because...
To be fair, a high number of atheists do have bad relationships with their father. But then again, I mean, I think just a high percentage of the world has a bad relationship with their father.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't seem
bad
like
bad fathers
logic.
Don't breed atheists, necessarily.
Right. Not necessarily.
Not That's necessarily.
Exactly just because...
I do think there's a correlation, though.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's a necessary.
So it's just, again...
Because I had a bad father.
Yeah.
But I came to faith.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on then. Number 10. Have you read the Bible? This is a Christian saying to an atheist, have you read the Bible? And the atheist's response, I guarantee you that if you spoke to an outspoken atheist, they know more about the Bible than most random Christians out there. A few questions that I have for Christians, he says, is one, have you read your own Bible? Two, have you read other holy books? If you can simply dismiss them without reading them, why can't I do the same thing about your Bible? And number three, what atheist books have you read?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, he's got a great point there. So, yes, I've read the Bible. Yes, I've read other holy books. Mm-hmm. A lot, the major ones. And what was that last point?
What atheist books have you read?
Oh, yeah, and I've read lots of atheist books. In fact, I have enjoyed many of them, like Camus and Sartre and others. Mm-hmm. But again, though, he shows his cards. It doesn't sound like to me like he's read the Bible, nor does mm-hmm. it sound like he's too interested. Mm-hmm. But you know, the truth is, I know a lot of atheists who know the Bible quite well.
Mm-hmm. I remember talking to a friend who was, back then he was a Satanist. Now he styles himself an adherent of Taoist neo-paganism or something like
now,
that.
Now, what kind of Satanist was he? Because a lot of people don't realize that Satanism isn't necessarily demonic. It's actually more atheistic.
Yeah, he was definitely the latter.
Yeah.
In fact, he enjoyed kind of putting down other Christians who assumed that Satanism was strictly devil worship.
Yeah, it tends to the religion itself is just it's a form, it's like a religious form of atheism.
Right. And I remember talking to him, and you know, we talked about my faith a whole lot because obviously he knew something about Christianity, and I was a Christian. He was an atheist, so we kind of went back and forth. And I remember telling him one time, you know, like, yeah, have you read the Bible? And he was very quick to say, I took a Bible study class for 6 weeks. And I was thinking to myself, really? I mean, some people spend a lifetime to study the Bible, and you think you can understand, you can plumb the depths of what God's Scripture has to say in 6 weeks? Hmm. And you know, I've studied biblical studies. I took the biblical studies program locally here at Columbia Bible College, and I don't claim to know all of the Bible. I don't claim to know the Bible like as well as, say, somebody like Craig Evans, for example, mm-hmm. right? I'm not saying that everybody has to be a scholar like Craig Evans, but I'm just thinking that a lot of atheists and skeptics of other sorts may jump to this conclusion too quickly that they know the Bible really well just because they've read through it once. There are a lot of things that you can study, you can look into. There are other literatures that will kind of shed light on the things that you read. And so I would just want to encourage, I want to encourage our atheist or skeptic listeners to dig a little deeper than just reading the Bible through once.
Hmm.
Number 11, things you shouldn't say to an atheist, I will pray for you. And his response, the atheist's response, is, I appreciate the heart, but if you really want to make a difference, do something for me. Prayer doesn't do anything. If you really want to say something nice, say something like, you'll be my thoughts. God's not going to make anything better. This one I actually agreed with what he had to say. And of course, you know, if somebody from, say, a Buddhist tradition were to come up to me in my, you know, let's say, you know, I lost my family in a tragic car accident, and a Buddhist comes up to me and he tells me that he is going to make offerings at his temple, right? I'll appreciate the thought, but I'm not a Buddhist, and that's not going to be very comforting to me.
Right.
So I can appreciate that for atheists, or more specifically, scientific naturalists who believe that there's nothing beyond the particles. Yeah, I will pray for you. It doesn't sound like much.
Don't you think it needs to be both? Because at first I read that and I thought, or I watched that and I thought, huh. Because part of me goes, well, I do want to pray for him. Mm-hmm. And I do want him to hear my relationship with God as I pray with him. Mm-hmm. But I think he's right. If all you do is just say, I'll pray for you, mm-hmm. It's not very loving, actually. I mean, yeah. We should be more than just about praying for an individual, if you have a relationship with that individual,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, you can pray for them and
do something practical. Yeah,
yeah. And in fact, I mean, that's where a lot of evangelism actually takes place, mm-hmm. is in when people have crisis or need, right? That you're able to tangibly love and care for that person, and they're able to experience God's love.
I think in a lot of ways, Christians left a bad taste in atheists' mouth. Just because really they have no intention of actually doing anything practical for them, but just to be nice to them, they'll say, oh, I'll pray for you, but nothing else, right? And
yeah.
I mean, I would feel pretty betrayed by that if I were an atheist, right?
Yeah, it seemed pretty empty.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number 12, do you worship the devil?
Of course they do.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, this one's pretty silly. I mean, I would agree with the atheist in this video. You know, that's, I mean, I don't agree with his statement that Satan is as silly as the idea of God, because I do believe in the reality of both God and Satan. But I do agree that this is a pretty silly question to ask.
It's bad logic, yeah.
Yeah. It's just a gross misunderstanding of what atheism is actually about.
Yeah.
Number 13, you must be agnostic. You're really not an atheist. You must be an agnostic. And his response is, I'm not 100% certain that God doesn't exist, but I'm reasonably certain that he doesn't. That doesn't make me an agnostic. To me, an agnostic is someone who believes that there is not enough evidence one way or the other, so they're not going to take a position. Don't label me or apply a warped definition on me. I'll decide on the definition for myself.
This is such a hot topic lately. Mm-hmm. People quibbling over the definition of atheism. Nobody's arguing over the definition of agnostic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if God exists. But lots of people right now are arguing over the definition of atheism.
How can you know if there's a real definition of agnostic out there?
Yeah, right. John feels pretty good about that.
Yeah.
You know, consensus, John, tells us that...
we have good evidence to believe that there is a definition for agnostic out there somewhere.
You know what? To me, I'm like, you know what? Whatever. However you want to define what you believe... Because he really gave his definition there that he's not 100% sure. So most people would call that agnosticism. They would say somebody who's 100% sure, they would say, you know, would be an atheist. So to me, if that's how he wants to define atheism, fine. The question I think that the Christian wants to get at is this. Is your heart, mind, is it at least open? Like I said to that other atheist, could you be convinced? Mm-hmm. Kind of mentality.
Yeah, and I think he does have a point in that. I think what you meant by being 100% certain is more like, is he going to take a hard position that there is no God? Is he actually going to affirm that position? And because, I mean, I don't know with 100% certainty that God exists, but I would still count myself a theist.
Maybe I would put it this way. I would say for me personally that I'm 100% God exists, but I could be convinced otherwise.
Right.
Like I'm open to God's non-existence. Mm-hmm. I'm not closed to his non-existence, but I am confident in his existence. I could say the same thing with my wife. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% convinced that my wife exists, but I'm open to that I could be wrong about it. I mean, I think of that movie, A Beautiful Mind, right? Where he was convinced, his friend existed. But then he found out that he had schizophrenia and he actually didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So... I don't know if that's the best way to... I've often thought about it. How do I put my belief into, you know, into words? Like, how my certainty... Because I want to say that I'm as certain as I can be of anything.
Right. I think you're certain in the sense that, you know, you're confident that God exists beyond all reasonable doubt, maybe.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Because I guess here's the thing with Christianity that's significant to me. If this was, say, Islam, say if I was a Muslim, for example, then my confidence in Allah would be, I'd probably have to like rate it. It wouldn't be 100%. It would be somewhere below 100%. And the reason is because there you can only acquire facts about Allah. So whatever you're going to weigh evidence-wise, it's going to be one-sided. It can only be factual evidence that you could weigh. See, whereas Christianity is different. Christianity is about a relationship with God. So it applies both forms of knowledge. In epistemology, you have two main forms of knowledge, facts and experience. So you're able to both have factual knowledge of God and experience God. And so that's why it takes my belief to another level. I have factual beliefs about my wife's existence. I see her every day when I get home from work. And there's evidence or experience her every day I get home from work, but there's evidence that she's been there as well, like when there's cookies or something. It's the same thing with God. I can experience God. I don't just have knowledge of God. I can experience God. And so that takes my belief. That's why I would say I'm 100% confident that God exists, although I could be convinced otherwise.
Right. Okay. Maybe we can do another podcast episode on the definition of atheism, agnosticism, and just the recent attempts to define atheism as this lack of belief rather than affirmation of the proposition that God does not exist.
It's very popular right now. Mm-hmm.
Number 14, we're almost at the end here. Isn't atheism a religion? This kind of ties into what we were talking about previously. No. The atheist's response, no, atheism is a religion, like off is a TV channel and bald is a hair color. It doesn't make any sense. It's a rejection of religion. To me, religion means believing in this higher power.
Yeah. This one, I think that he's just dead wrong. Atheism is a religion, period. I guess you could try to argue over how you're going to define religion, but religion is what are you going to worship? That's how I would define it. Religion is what you're going to worship, and an atheist knows what they're going to worship. They're going to. I would argue that an atheist is going to worship humanity, probably himself being numero uno. That is scientific naturalism. That is humanism, right? And so that's why I would say that atheism is a religion because it's a worldview. It's a worldview, and second, inside that worldview, you will choose to worship something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember,
which I think speaks volumes to us as humans.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation after a Skeptics Cafe session. This older gentleman came up to me, and we started talking about this very issue. And yeah, it does come down to, well, how do you define religion? And I offered this definition to him. A religion is really a take on the ultimate reality.
Yep.
Right? Christianity is a take on the ultimate reality. So is Buddhism. So is secular humanism. So is atheism.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The question is, well, which one are you going to believe in? Because ultimately, they all come down to some kind of a faith position. Yep. A philosophical commitment. If this atheist is going to define it as believing in this higher power, well, then I think he's right. Atheism isn't a religion that way. But when I think of religion, I think of a take on the ultimate reality, and so atheism is just as much a religion as anything else.
Well, and I still would argue, though, you could even say that he does believe in a higher power. It's just not as high as we would put it, because if he does have a commitment, atheists are committed to physicalism, that the physical world is all there is, and so whatever higher power you're going to have or you're going to look up to, it's going to be within the physical world. You won't look outside of it, which to me I think is such a fascinating idea, and you're going to see more of this. I think you're going to start to see atheists becoming more open to things being non-physical, but they're not going to become open to God. So I think we're going to start seeing this in a number of years because in the area of consciousness and whatnot. It's just not working out to not have only physical things. They're wanting non-physical things to be able to answer certain things like consciousness. But currently, I don't know if this is going to hold for very long, but currently the commitment of the atheist is physicalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, J.P. Moreland's been blowing my mind on this topic lately. So if you guys are interested in this, his stuff on the soul, his defense of the soul lecture, I've listened to that. And I think he has a book out there now as well on this. But just the idea of what is our conscious, how did that develop, where did it come from? Mm-hmm. Is good evidence for the existence of God that I've been kind of exploring in my mind a little bit more.
And Thomas Nagel just wrote a book, was it God and the Mind and the Cosmos? Yeah. And here, there you have an atheist who's saying, hey guys, I think we need to be open to non-physical things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we just actually did a podcast on that not too long ago.
So J.P. Moreland and Thomas Nagel, check those guys out. Okay, the last one, we're here finally. Why are you so angry? Why are you so angry? And the atheist's response. Well,
haven't we already done that?
No, that's why are you mad at God?
Okay.
And this one is why are you so angry? But I guess you could kind of tie this one to the one where it said why are you mad at God? And his response is, well, it's because religious people do a lot of crazy things in the name of God. I'm not even talking about terrorism. Whether they're passing laws that restrict LGBT rights, women's rights, or whether they're making bad science curriculum decisions, passing revisionist history curriculums, they do things that make me really upset because I value the truth and I value people's rights. And it's clear that Christians in power often don't.
Oh, there's so much to be said on that, eh? Because atheists make me angry too sometimes, I'm sure theists make atheists angry. I mean, there's no question about that. And there's no question about the fact that atheists make theists angry.
And theists make other theists angry.
And atheists make other atheists angry. Did you hear about recently the atheist church is having their first church split?
Right.
Yeah.
That was on the news the other day because apparently things aren't all roses and daisies over there either. Mm. So I find that just really silly. What I think, though, he's getting at, if he were to press this, which I'm sure he would, is that religion is the reason for all the world's troubles. Mm-hmm. You know, it's religion that's causing all the trouble. And I can't tell you the number of times I speak on university campuses and at churches where I will meet atheists who are convinced, they really are, they're convinced that if you just rid the world of religion, we would finally have our utopian society. I mean, they sound like Mao. Mm-hmm. You know, religion is poison. And if you could just get rid of religion, just destroy the religious institutions, whatever it takes, you know, then we'll hit this, then we'll reach this utopian society. And I don't think there's a lot of them lining up to go live in China right now. Mm-hmm. So that one requires a whole podcast to unravel, but it's so fallacious.
We've done a podcast on religion and
is religion harmful? That was the last one.
Yeah. Oh, we did do on it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I don't even remember doing it. But if you know, I think we mentioned Paul Chamberlain's book on that as well.
Yes,
yeah.
We did.
To bring it full circle, that also explains why your 6-year-old beat you in the game of memory.
Touché, John.
In the same way, we.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, John. Did you say something?
Yeah. So.
No, sir.
That's all 15 of them. His name is Heman Mehta, I think. He makes this closing comment, which I actually agree with a great deal. He says, talk to an atheist without bringing in your stereotypes. If you make these comments, the comments that we talked about, the 15 of them, it shows that you assume a lot of things about us, the atheists, before you even talk to us. Now, I agree with it wholeheartedly. I would ask the same thing of the atheists. Because if you've noticed, when he is talking about Christians, he's talking about a very particular kind of Christians. Of course, when you talk about these things and you refer to a group of people, atheists, Buddhists, or Christians and what have you, you end up generalizing, and there are always exceptions. And in fact, when Greg Kokel, who has written the book Tactics, it's a book on how to talk to people about your faith, about anything really, he's had somebody come up to him and ask him, could you recommend some good books on Buddhism for me? His response was, don't bother. Go and ask a Buddhist, because even in Buddhism, there are so many different kinds of Buddhism,
yeah.
And this person may not necessarily stick to any one of them in a hard, fast kind of a way, so you just want to ask that person and bring out the person's beliefs.
I can't tell you the number of times I put my foot in my mouth by assuming I know what somebody believes. One of the things I often say when I teach on world religions is become a student of people, not a student of religions.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get good at that. You have to find out what does that person believe, because if you just generalize, you'll always be wrong, because nobody holds to everything. Mm-hmm. You might know what that religion officially teaches, but you have no idea what that person specifically believes.
Yeah. Okay. Any last comments that you want to make, John?
No, feeling good. I think we just wrapped that sucker up nicely in a nice, big, pretty bowl.
Okay.
You make some good podcast eye candy, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
You got a face for podcasting.
I have a face for podcasting. Thank you.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up there. Thanks for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been the ministry of Apologetics Canada. See you next week.